Okay. You perhaps have wondered why we are continuing on continually talking about communication. That's because that's what you process. That's what you're doing, so that's what you process. Now, that's very simple, isn't it? And the only place where a process breaks down is when the auditor fails to establish some reality on a communication before the processing as such begins. It's interesting, isn't it? It just fails to credit this thing called communication and then goes on and runs a process. Some wag invented the fact of processing a technique instead of processing the preclear. Well, that was a nice, smart crack, but if the person had said at that particular time something a little better, he would have said, one uses a mechanical technique and processes it rather than going into communication with it, with the preclear. This would be the difference. It would be whether or not the auditor and the preclear were in communication. And so we are talking again about a two-way communication between the auditor and the preclear, and then the preclear's communication with his environment. A definition of communication is, communication is the consideration and action of impelling an impulse or particle from source point across a distance to receipt point with the intention of bringing into being at the receipt point a duplication of that which emanated from the source point. The formula of communication is cause, distance, effect with attention and duplication. The component parts of communication are consideration, intention, attention, cause, source point, distance, effect, receipt point, duplication, the velocity of the impulse or particle, nothingness or somethingness. A communication, by definition, does not need to be two-way. When a communication is returned, the formula is repeated, with the receipt point now becoming the source point, and the former source point now becoming a receipt point. What chance does a preclear have, just picking up the last thing first, what chance does a preclear have of getting well by an auditor who is not willing to be processed? What possible chance would a preclear have? There we have a source point which is unwilling to be a receipt point. And there we would get the auditor into strange bits of re-stimulation, simply because he was resisting all the time being this preclear. And there you get the insistence of most therapies that those who administer them be processed. Well, there's no reason why an individual would have to be processed forever. After his case was in pretty good condition, and he continued to be willing to be processed, he could go on and process thousands of preclears without an instant of restimulation, ever. See how simple that is. Similarly, in the whole business of living, one could get up to a certain level where he himself was willing to live, was willing to communicate, and then the business of living would go on beautifully as long as he continued to be willing to be a receipt point and a source point. And only where this unwillingness occurs do we discover then a vast difficulty. You see that? So we have people who go around who cut affinity lines. How would they cut an affinity line? By demonstrating to people that something was not to be duplicated. And they would rush around and talk about this, how bad it all was over there. Reference 16G, Journal of Scientology, Scientology, Science of Certainty. That's what they would do. And you look around in a group, if you want to discover the difficulties in that group and resolve the problems of that group, let's see where that group is being made unwilling to duplicate. By whom? For what? And we would find somebody there, the worst off one would be the one who was cutting the affinity lines. I wonder if this would apply broadly to industry. Let's look at industry and discover that it's composed by personnel of two parts, capital and labor, according to some people's little rule book, which they read off to the workers, but in actuality of management and labor, since the capital involved is derived from, more often than not, the workers themselves, by stocks. The mythical bugaboo called capitalist no longer haunts either the Western or the Asiatic hemispheres. Never. They just don't any longer exist, really, as such. Therefore, we would look somewhere here for an affinity line to be cut if anyone intended to completely ruin industry or ruin a nation. And we would get not labor unions as clubs to promote the betterment of and to better the management of an industry, but we would get them as mechanisms to cut the affinity on the command lines in industry itself. And so we would look for the labor agitator cutting affinity lines if we wish to predict where an industry would fall. If we were going to predict the future course of any industry, we would predict it on the basis of this. To what degree are the affinity lines cut in that industry? And what do we mean by affinity lines? Affinity, degree of duplication, amount of enforced or inhibited duplication. Now, where we have then a cut line on a communication line, we would look for then a lessening of freedom. How would we make workers into slaves? How would we make them into slaves? That would be very, very important to know, wouldn't it? Particularly somebody who wanted to make workers into slaves. I'll tell you, one of the best methods I know of to make workers into slaves, the very best method I know of, it's codified and it's widespread at this time. It's called communism. It would say the way to be free is to cut all affinity lines with management. That's the way to be free. Now, I'm not giving you political propaganda. I'm trying to give you the role of a Scientologist in predicting difficulties, resolving problems. If we have a continuously cut affinity line, we're going to look for, then, something which mustn't be duplicated, must be unwilling to receive, must be unwilling to be received. We're looking for this exact communication formula when we are looking for the little blocks to pull out to decrease the amount of deterioration in any industry, in any group, or anything. Here is the formula by which you would straighten out any group of any size, starting with a pre-clear. Because it is not true that your pre-clear, as you lay hands on him, is the first dynamic. That was overlooked in Book 1 because we did not know about this factor of the Thetan being an energy production unit. The Thetan as an energy production unit can be the first dynamic, but the moment he is allied with another living thing, he becomes a group. And so you, in essence, continue to process a group. You start with a pre-clear. You could go up through a group of pre-clears. You could go up from there to a small business, a small political club or set, into large businesses, large governments, right on up to a national scale, and you would never once find violations of your processes and techniques and formulas of Scientology, and you could work those, each and every one, on any such entity you cared to process. You would do these same things with the preclear you are trying to remedy his ability to duplicate, to bring him into a willingness to duplicate, a willingness to be received, a willingness to receive, a willingness to be duplicated, to be source point, to be effect or receipt point, to cause, to be the effect of. And as you remedy these things, he becomes freer and freer and freer. We get him to tolerate greater and greater distance without the mere fact of a small distance, when increased, turning into hate or distrust. You see, a very small increase of distance for most people is beyond their tolerance of distance. And so they start distrusting. And if you get far enough away and they still know about something, you will get them hating it. And this in itself is the germ of war which causes man in his nations to fight every time he has a young generation to throw into a battlefield. It's simply that factor, an intolerance of distance. And that's all. Because as the distance goes out beyond his point of tolerance, his ability to tolerate it degenerates finally into a complete loss of tolerance, which is in itself hate. All right. So when we look at this communication formula, we are looking at the factors which, when we resolve them, will produce a maximum amount of sanity on the part of not just a preclear, but of a world. Now, when I say a world, you can immediately look at the world, can't you? And you can see that nations divided by language, communication itself divided by boundaries, by an inability to interchange goods. We would look at each one of those borders to be a sort of a ridge, a barrier, which is impassable. We'd look at less and less tolerance of distance. If you don't think that these boundaries are ridges, you ought to go down to their customs department sometimes and take a look at those customs departments and just see that stuff racked up in all directions, arriving and stopping and arriving and stopping. It's an enormous ridge. Just look at it sometime and think what that does to a nation's security, that ridge right there in the customs department. And as we look at the world picture and recognize that the continuous existence of such ridges, the continuous existence of an intolerance of distance, which makes an airplane land almost every time it takes off so as to get its wheels into another country so that country can inspect it, coming in to the United States, by the way, from the far side of Europe, is just a continual progress through these ridges. It's fabulous. Your airplanes travel up there now around 330, 380 miles an hour, these transport planes do. And yet, all of this communication ability is cut to pieces on the basis of, this is a nation's boundary. This is a boundary. We're somebody else. We're not in communication with anybody else. And everything which you have on you is suspect, and you are suspect, and you've got to have papers, and you've got to have more papers, and we don't know what you're going to do. We haven't any idea what you've got in your pockets or what you intend toward this government. If you get the idiocy of this, let's look at a highly personalized view here. I wouldn't miss if I were talking about this in mentioning the right, but not quite right, honorable, we hope, Home Secretary of the great nation of Great Britain. He will let in anything he thinks he could make nothing of, such as bellboys, from any quarter of the globe, if he possibly thinks of it. He lets them in. But he would not permit to stay on British soil anyone who held a chair in any university in the world, except Great Britain. Oh, that sounds impossible. Nobody could do a thing like that. That's completely idiotic. If there's anything that must be free, it must be a knowledge communication line, because that's the one thing you can't stop. And certainly there's nothing very harmful in the chair of physics or the chair of anthropology of Duke University, for instance. You go down there and meet that guy. He's the mildest fellow you ever saw in your life. Yet he couldn't go to Great Britain. If he did go to Great Britain, if they did let him stay there for any short space of time, he would have to check into a police station every time he turned around just to make sure that he was not doing any lecturing and doing no work of any kind, and he would be visited by the police continually to make sure that he was not doing any work and not communicating in Great Britain. Now, that's very tough, and somebody who hears that in Great Britain says, that's impossible. Well, no, that's not impossible. In the United States, if you happen to have a slight lemon color to your skin, you can't even cross that line. There's some question about a chair of a university getting into Great Britain. He can get there long enough to be turned back. But that won't even happen in America, where anybody from Asia is concerned. The yellow peoples are entirely excluded. And yet we thought of California as a vast garden at one time or another. Have you been out there recently? It's not a garden. It used to have the most beautiful places you ever saw. You used to drive down the highways, and here were these lovely, lovely farms and so forth on every hand. And when they went to war with Japan, why, they said, well, look at all this beautiful land. We'll just have to have this land. Gulp. And they grabbed all this land. The alien property custodian and other people, disenfranchised, often without any payment of any kind, the Oriental peoples from their land in California. And the funny part of it was that it was their industry alone which kept those lands fertile. And those lands lie there today barren, completely barren and eroding, going to pieces, because we just can't have anybody with a yellow tint to his skin in America. What is this all about? What is matter with somebody with a yellow tint to his skin? I've got a lot of friends who have yellow tints to their skin. Got a lot of friends that have black tints to their skins. And I even have some people who have black tints to their skins who will tolerate me as a friend even though I have a white skin. Now, it's quite remarkable when you come to think about it. I even know Negroes who will sit down to dinner with me. You talk about ability to tolerate, that's pretty high, because that's in Haiti. They hardly dare speak to you in Haiti. They have a barrier too, white people. And so everywhere we look in the world, we see these cut communication lines. We must not communicate. And yet as we look around in the world, we see that every race has its own abilities, every race its own capabilities, and that the intentions of that race are basically pretty darn good. And yet every other nation, any other nation to which a person is not a citizen, regards that citizen as an interloper, a thief, as a criminal of some sort. They expect him to have bombs in both pockets. I dare say if an American turned up in Russia today, he would have squads of secret police sleeping under his bed and on the roof of the hotel where he was in and everything else, if he could get into Russia today. And you wonder that this would not be a situation of chaos? Why, certainly it's a situation of chaos. Certainly you're going to get war out of this. Well, why am I talking about that? Just to give you a big pep talk about war and the fourth dynamic? No. Because that's your preclair. Let's reduce that picture now down in size. And let's look at this body where the head can't communicate with the kidneys and the kidneys can't communicate with the right foot. And the right foot is inhibited from communicating with and duplicating the small of the back. And the thetan, who can't duplicate the body because he thinks, get together that much mass. And the body, which can't duplicate the thetan, it's so much so that when it looks around and tries to duplicate nothing, it gets sick at its stomach. Violently ill. As I demonstrated to you yesterday, if you hadn't run into the phenomena. Well, this looks like an anarchy, too. What would happen if you knocked apart all the boundaries of earth. And you let races freely mingle with races. There is a vast chance that these races might come down to a monotone of man intermingled, intermarried. Oh, yes, that's what people tell you. This might happen, except that it probably wouldn't happen, because duplication is nowhere as enforced as in sex. But, yes, men can't mate with goats. But more important than that, you find men of one race will mate with the women of that race. It's quite remarkable that they do. But supposing it did come down to such a melting pot situation, will the greatest country on the face of earth today, given impetus by its English founders, is the United States of America. There isn't much doubt about that. You can come over and take a look at its principles, its humanitarianism, its abilities, its young people, and so forth. They just don't compare. Every other country on the face of earth that knows anything about America either fears America terribly and is quite upset, or respects America very much. Now, there's something going on here. There are now 48 states all in good communication with one another. Are they all the same race, each one in those states? No, they certainly are not. If you look over the founding fathers of America, you find the initial impetus was English. But then we discover that they were French, African. There's a great deal of the original inhabitant left here, too, Indian. You find out they're Chinese. They're Japanese before they cut them off entirely. But they were Dutch. There were many, many races came into this country. And now as you look across the strait of the white race, if you ask an American very rapidly, let's see, what were the nationalities or the racial stock of your great-great-grandparents? He will look at you rather blankly. I know this to be true, by the way, because an intelligence officer in the United States Navy, Office of Naval Intelligence, is required to trace his ancestry back as American-born for 5 generations. And he is not eligible. And when they asked me to do this, I had to scratch my head for a while. We were talking about the GE, and I didn't know too much about that line. And so I had to go and look it up. And I found out, by golly, I could trace it back 8 generations with great ease. And this was entirely acceptable to everybody, and everybody's very happy about this. But I discovered something else that was quite remarkable. I discovered that arithmetically, your genetic ancestors multiply by the square as you go back into the past, which is quite remarkable. You double it every time, you see. You had a father and a mother, and then you had 4 grandparents. And they had 8 parents, and those had 16 parents. I guess you call this, what, a geometric progression, isn't it? And then we go back, and we find out that if we go back something on the order of 800 years or thereabouts, we discover that we have more ancestors than we had on the face of Earth. We had more ancestors than there are people. There's something wrong here someplace. Well, what's wrong is there isn't any straight multiplicity of this character. You don't have such a multiplier. Actually, you have intermarriage. You have repetitive lineage. And you have families intermarrying. And it doesn't go out in that very smooth geometrical progression. And so, as far as you can tell, God knows who you're related to. Genetically, the Queen of Sheba, who was black as coal, or Chinese pirates. We don't know who you're related to. You don't either. But we can only go back a couple of thousand years to trace anything down at all, and then it becomes very uncertain. And we go back 3,500 years, we've run to end of track on anything written. and we go back 8,000 years from this present date, we have run into the beginning period that we now have a written record of, the Vedic hymns. And now we've run fresh out of tradition, 8,000 years. Why, that's no generations at all. No generations whatever. We've got to go back 10, 12, 15, 20. Whoa. One time, an anthropologist a few years ago was digging a cave in the Middle East, and he found seven civilizations, each one a very complete civilization, stratas of them, as he went down and examined the shards. And he finally found in the seventh civilization all the implements of a stone age. Stone axes, so on, of a rather crude nature, which had evidently endured for tens of thousands of years. And he found all that strata, and he went down below that, and he found green radioactive glass. That's a fact. Green glass. It looked just like the glass which lies out here on the desert at Los Alamos Gordos, where they blew off the first atom bomb. And that's still radioactive, that stuff out there. That's right. There'd been fission there before that caveman. How far back do you go? Who knows? Who knows? But it isn't important. The point is today that we have gotten up to a level where people have to postulate some sort of a super purity of race, of nationality, of creed, of belief, so that they have to have big high-wire fences and customs and immigrations and this-is and that-is and examine posts and iron curtains and tin curtains and pink curtains and lace curtains in order to be happy. Well, man may be happy with barriers, but you look at that preclear and you won't find he's very happy. And what happens if you clear out all these barriers out of a preclear? What happens if you put this right foot into communication with the kidney into communication with the left ear? What would happen if you went through a total process of reducing to a tolerance of communication every part of the body? We would find that the right foot was still able to consider itself and much more able to consider itself a right foot. And furthermore, it could not only consider itself a right foot, it could consider that a kidney had a right to be a kidney, which it's objecting to right now, and that other people had a right to have right feet, which it's objecting to right now, and it would be a right foot, and it would be a beautiful right foot, and it would function perfectly. Mainly because you took out all the barricades, you took out all the barriers and the cut communication lines. And what did you arrive at the end of that process? You arrived at a much higher individuality than you'd ever had before on the part of that right foot and that kidney and that right ear and that thing. Well, that's real curious. Well, I've run the process all the way out. I've made the test all the way through, and I've found out that a total restoration of the ability to consider, to duplicate, to communicate results in a high level of individuality. Individuality is then not based, even remotely. Individuality is not founded on aberration, on barriers. It's founded on ideas, and it's as good as those ideas are free. So, whether it's a world we're processing or a preclear that we're processing, the sky is the limit on this communication formula. You can't lose, you can't miss, if you use it all the way through and restore all possible freedom. You'll be happier about it in the end. Thank you.